first of all, thank you so much, Marvin, for being with us. And thank you for making the time. I know we had one of the podcasts, and through the conversation, it was clear to me that there was just so much that we could learn from you and with your expertise in the exit, that I feel like many of the audiences could be very interested in the framework and the resources and the work that you've done throughout your career and what you do today. So thank you.
All right. Well, let's jump in.
Yeah. So maybe you could give the audiences just a brief synopsis of who is Marvin? What did you do and what are you doing now?
Oh, probably like a lot of your audience, I'm an entrepreneur. I come from an entrepreneurial family. My father had his own business, several businesses. And so I grew up in a home where, you know, captaining your own ship and some of the ups and downs of running your own business was fairly evident. And so my father really didn't want me actually to pursue, you know, his specific career. And that was, he was an auto mechanic, and he didn't have a formal education. And, you know, being a mechanic was a pretty hard life. And he wanted, you know, something like all parents do, wanted something better for their kids. And so he really wanted me to get an education. And so I sort of drifted in that direction. And I got my degree in accounting and went to work for a large national firm, what is now referred to as Deloitte. And I figured out very quickly that, you know, sitting in a cubicle doing accounting, you know, ledgers and at the time, and, you know, working on the financial side of things. And that was really the reason I went into accounting, was to learn the financial side of business management. And I was able to do that. But I, you know, just my entrepreneurial roots, I wanted something a little bit different. I was more creative, more, you know, thinking outside of the box. And when you're an accountant, you kind of color within the lines most of the time. And I was playing pickup basketball with a group, you know, every week for several years. And I met a guy and we started talking. And before you know it, we had turned in our resignations and had launched our own business and had a great ride. But as often with partnerships, you know, we tend to grow apart and our goals and objectives changed. And we ended up, you know, winding down and selling that business and moving on. And I got involved in my next venture. And that took me the next couple of decades, scaling and business, building that business. And not too long ago, I exited from that business. And it was, you know, some of the other exits I've had earlier in my career were much smaller, had involved a lot less people. This last exit involved a lot of locations and a lot of people and private equity and boards of directors. And if I'd have been a little bit more dialed in to that process, I probably would have done things differently. And the outcome probably would have been a little bit better than it was. So I just, as I stepped away from the business and took a breather, I got to thinking about that process and decided, hey, there's probably a lot of other people out there that are going through what I have gone through and probably are unfamiliar with the process, the things that you should know. And I decided I would do a podcast about that. I love podcasts and I listen to them all the time. And so I that's what I did. I started talking initially to business owners, but eventually gravitated toward talking to the people that make the deals happen. And those are M&A advisors, wealth managers, investment bankers, CPAs, you know, people that are involved in the transaction flow of the business. And I found that these professionals have a deep portfolio of transactions they've dealt with, dozens, if not hundreds of transactions. And so I will talk to them about some of their transactions that went well and why, and talk to them about deals that went sideways, that blew up, and maybe closed, maybe didn't. And what were the reasons that the outcome was such. And out of these discussions come some phenomenal lessons. These are actual real case studies of what entrepreneurs did right, what they did wrong, how they were able to get more than they ever imagined for their business, and how some thought they were had the business to end all businesses, and they were just going to be able to sell it for 10 times of what they had put into it. And it didn't always work out that way. And I, you know, there are reasons that things don't work out the way you intend. And there are reasons that you can actually guide the outcome and be somewhat predictive of how much you're going to put in the bank when that wire transfer hits your bank after you've sold your business. And so I've just developed a process, kind of a methodology, a strategy for standing back and taking a look at your business. And I found that most entrepreneurs, that's one of the things they don't get right very often. They will spend tons of time researching a new market or a business opportunity and pay a lot of people for data and information. But when it comes to stepping away from their business and monetizing what they've spent decades and in some cases a lifetime building, proportionately they spend 10 minutes thinking about it. It sometimes doesn't have very, very great outcomes, and it's all preventable, you know? So that's kind of, you know, what I've learned in my career is that you're in business to make a good living, provide for your family, you know, build a brand, create a company that has value, and you might as well learn how to monetize all that hard work that, you know, takes a long time to create.
Yeah, thank you so much, Marvin. I think you're onto something with the fact that most entrepreneurs, as you know, having grown up with some yourself, you don't start the business because you want to exit. You start the business because you want to be in it. And I love how you said it. If you start knowing that you're going to exit at one point, whether it's, you know, I always tell people whether you're going to die in it or pass it on to someone else, it's still an exit. And if you could plan for the exit, to your point, it's much better off, because then you could start putting some pieces and components that makes a difference and, you know, excite people to either take over the business, buy the business, or transition the business to someone else. Because at the end of the day, we all have to exit this life, you know, want it or not, we have to exit. So if you could plan for it, then your exit maybe a little smoother.
Yeah, I mean, if you really think about it, yeah, there are only a handful of things that can happen to your business. Actually, three, maybe four. One is that you're going to live forever, which is not a likely situation. You're not going to operate your business for 100 years, you know, so you're eventually going to have to step away. And if you do, then you're going to pass it on to a partner, a family member, employees. That's one option. You're going to wind it down and go out of business, maybe voluntarily or involuntarily, to fold up the tent and call it a day and go home. That's not a desirable outcome in most situations, or you're going to sell it to a third party. Those are really your only options. Sell it to someone, an insider, sell it to someone that's an outsider, or just wind the business down. Those are really sort of your options. And if those are your options, then you should plan on which one fits your situation the best and then plan for it. If you don't, circumstances will probably dictate which of one of those it's going to be. And if you don't plan for it, the outcome is generally, I would say, almost categorically, less than you want.
Yeah, no, thank you. That's helpful. You know, if we to go back, and I want to dig just through one thing you said earlier, as you said, you yourself reflecting back, you recognized that there were some things that you could have done differently. I mean, probably the list is, you know, short, long, it doesn't really matter. Can you maybe give us, Marvin, one or two examples that really could help the audiences understand how maybe little it is or big it is, those one or two things that you would have made a different choices with, knowing them, what were maybe your top one or two things? And I know through the interviews that you've done, you probably have lots more, but let's just maybe focus on one or two of them.
Yeah, we could spend the next day or two just chatting about the different components of an exit. But generally speaking, there are some key criteria that you really need to pay attention to. What I've often told entrepreneurs, I've conducted a lot of masterminds and classes, and I've asked people in that environment, if you were selling your business today as it is today, would you buy it? Would you buy your business as it is today? That means, are the financial statements up to date? Are they accurate? You know, are your contracts in place? What is your lease? If you lease a building, if you own a building, what condition it is in? Would you actually buy that business today? And if you would, what would you pay for it? And I can tell you almost categorically, almost universally, that most people that are asked that question kind of hang their heads and look down at their feet or the desk and say, you got a good point there. I don't know if I would give as much as I would want for the business, I don't think I would pay for that. And so that has been kind of an eye opener. You know, when people actually go round to the other side of the table and view the transaction of actually having them step away from their business and selling it to somebody else, of what would that person pay? And what's going to be important for those people? You know, what are they going to be looking for? And so this isn't rocket science, but you have to view the world not through your eyes, because you're an entrepreneur. What happens is that you get so lost in the weeds of running your business that you only see through those eyes of an entrepreneur of running your business. So you know the ins and outs of your business and how hard you've worked and how much money you've invested and the blood, sweat, and tears that went into growing your business. And you want to translate all of that hard work and all of your knowledge into a monetary number. And generally, what you have in mind for that monetary number is a lot more than the business actually justifies in most cases. Now, there are situations where the business is actually worth more to somebody else than it is in your ownership of the business. And that's really where you want to be able to find that type of buyer. And that's called a strategic acquirer. You know, someone that could take your business to the next level and fold it into what they're doing, and it has more value to them than it does to you. And what that means, in most cases, they're willing to pay for that. And so that's an ideal type of situation. But if you're just looking, now take an example of someone that is an entrepreneur that runs his business on a day-to-day basis. He comes into his shop or his store or his factory and plant every day, and the wheels turn because he's there. And if he's not around, the wheels turn a lot slower and the revenue doesn't grow as fast, and people don't fulfill their responsibility as quickly as when he is there. If that's your environment and your situation, you got a big problem, because a buyer is going to look at that business and see that you or someone like you is going to be required to actually be on site and run that business. And so you've narrowed the pool of people that are willing to pay for your business. And it's generally someone like you. If that is your profile of what we're looking at, then you're looking for someone that will do the same thing that you're doing. And that means coming in every day, making the wheels turn, motivating people, keeping track of everything, holding people responsible for getting things done. You need to find someone like that. And quite frankly, that's not very easy to do. And it's hard to find someone like that. And when you find someone like that, then you have to convince them that there's value there and that they should pay for the value more than for you. What's actually there if you aren't there? And so that really depresses the value. And so if you take that criteria, then what you have to do is make the business run without you being there. Yep. And if the business can run without you being there and actually run as well or better than when you're there, then you have an entirely different crop of buyers out there that will take a look at your business. And they will pay a different price than our first scenario, and sometimes a lot more. And, you know, that is one of the key components. Another key component that most people kind of miss sometimes is really how important the culture of the business is. You know, the culture of your employees, how they're motivated, what they believe the company is all about. Do they like being there? Are they committed and dedicated to the company and serving customers? A lot of times entrepreneurs kind of ignore that component of the business because they are the driver in the business. And again, coming to the fact that if your employees are motivated to serve the customer and that's part of the DNA of the business, it's worth more. It just simply is flat out worth more. And most entrepreneurs, quite frankly, drop the ball on that. They don't consciously work on the culture of their company and creating that reason for being, if there is, and what the mission of the company is. And they don't ingrain that into the DNA. When they hire people, they don't talk about it. They're hiring out of a reactive nature because someone left unexpectedly. And they're not proactive in that. And the culture over time gets very watered down until there virtually is no culture. And so those are a couple of things to answer your question. Those are a couple of things that I think most people who are looking to extract value out of their business kind of ignore or don't pay as much attention to as they should.
Marvin, I asked for two, you gave me six that I could capture trying to write down some of the concepts you gave. So I'm going to reflect back at, you know, them at you, because I feel, and this is what I was saying earlier with you, you know, people hear the word exit or entrepreneurship and they get confused because they think they know all this stuff. And they might know the words. I do this because we do entrepreneurship development. It's somewhat similar to your space, Marvin, in the aspect that everybody thinks they know how to run a business. Everybody thinks that they could do it better than anybody else could, you know, teach them or provide any information to them. They could just Google that. You know, they think that they know the words. And what I tell people is the words are similar. Actually, you know the words. You might even know the content of the words, but applying the words to the concept that you're discussing is where the magic happens. And that's where you're going to, you know, at least not fail, but face challenges if you don't have the right support system. And same what you described, when I listed down, the first thing you ask is, ask yourself, would you buy the business? So just putting that first question. So these are the things that I asked you earlier, which, what do you think some of the key points that you're reflecting back you would have done differently? The first question you said, I would ask myself, would I buy this business? And if so, what am I buying? So that's actually a couple of questions right there. Then you said, what are you buying was the second question. Are you buying, you know, a service company? Are you buying a database, right? All these things could come to your mind. And then you said, can you sell it to someone that's aligned strategically with you? Which I thought was brilliant, Marvin, because now you're saying, hey, you might think you're in the service industry and you sell XYZ, but someone might look at you and say, you actually have data that I need to sell more of my widgets. So that's
absolutely, you hit the nail on the head there, and that's the accelerator to valuation.
Yeah. So that's like a third, I'm going to call it the golden question, right? That you can ask yourself, can I think of my business as something else beyond what I'm operating it today? And I don't know the answer, but that's obviously something that you could help someone figure out. And then you said something else, creating systems in place versus running it from the hips, I'm going to call it, right? So You create a systems in place, which is more painful, more process, more infrastructure. But if I could create it not around me, but around the business, then I'm now creating a business that someone else could value. To ask the first question, and they all related somewhat, is would I buy this business? Well, sure, because if I shall go on vacation for the next 6 months, business runs without me. And there are maybe some, I'm gonna call them bottlenecks, but maybe I could create some other processes to get rid of that bottleneck, so therefore I'm no longer that neck.
Let me tell you, if you can leave your business for 4 to 6 months and have it run as well or almost as well as you being there, then you've created value. Then your buyer pool is tremendously expanded, and you'll have a lot of different type of buyers looking at your business because you are not essential to the business. They may have you on a consulting contract or an employment contract to help with the transition, but they're actually buying the business, not you. And that is critical. For example, I sit on the board of a company, a medical entity. He's a cardiovascular, has a cardiovascular practice. And you would expect that he's making a lot of money because of his specific core competency in cardiology. But he works extraordinarily hard. And he is the reason that the business is there, because most professionals like that, doctors and accountants and attorneys that sell their time, have a very difficult time of leveraging, you know, their time. They can only bill the number of hours of the day they can work. And although he was making a lot of money and growing, he was starting to look at an exit 5 to 7 years down the road and wanted to optimize and maximize that value. So we came back to the very core. And this is universal, whether you're selling widgets or, you know, helping people with their cardiovascular health. The bottom line is that he was the person that made the wheels turn in that practice. And so the plan and that we developed was to extract him out of that over time and bring in other cardiologists until he could actually take some time, because when he went on vacation, the wheels stopped. There wasn't anyone treating patients, you know, at the level that he was. And so the conscious goal was to create a company, a practice that was not focused and centered around him. So take the cardiology component out of there and put in that you're now a plumber. You're now, you know, developing it, have a distribution company, you know, whatever your company is all about. If you need to start thinking about what the actual value of the entity that you are building is actually worth without you. And if your answer to that question is not a whole lot, I can't take a 6 month vacation, because that's how we got started on this line of thought here, or the whole place would come apart. Well, that's really where you have to start focusing your energies on and putting in the concepts and strategies and hiring the right type of people and building that culture and creating those systems to where that can actually be a reality that you can take first a couple of weeks, then a month, then a couple of months off, and the business does well. In fact, we've gone through certain situations where the company actually runs better when the entrepreneur isn't there, because he's hired the right type of people that are self-motivated. They bought into the mission, the vision of the company, and they're very keyed in on customer service and improving the company's products and services. Sometimes the entrepreneur actually gets in the way.
No, that's a great insight. And that's actually to your two other points that you brought up, which I wanted to cover. You said the culture of employees and the customer-centric approach. So this is one of the 6 points that I captured from your 2 points. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling you have a lot more within those 2 points. If I had a little bit more time to take more notes even on...
We could talk for days on this topic, but you boil it down to some key components that most entrepreneurs miss that add value when you exit, because the person on the other side of the table is going to be looking at certain things that are important to him. And you know, most people focus on the financial metrics of the company. You know, what are your margins? You know, what is the growth rate? What is your net profit, you know, before taxes and amortization? You know, what is that EBITDA number? And while those are absolutely critical, and I don't want to minimize those, they're only one component in a more complex valuation of the business. And when you have those other elements all teed up and lined up, it serves as a real magnifier of the financial performance. Then you actually, because all the financial numbers do is measure all of these other things, you know, the output of all these other of these things. So when you talk about the culture of the company and, you know, the type of customers you have and customer concentration and what your competitive advantages is, all of those things, which are part of the valuation formula and creating real value in the company, the output of all those things is measured in financial performance. And that's why the financial metrics are really important, because that's the measuring stick of how well those other components are working in the business. And so a financial buyer will look at the financial metrics. A strategic buyer will look at other components of your business. They're not as keyed in to the financial metrics as a financial buyer is. So private equity, you know, people that acquire companies for their based on financial performance, they have a formula that they follow. And they have multiples for your specific industry, the vertical within your industry. They have standards that they apply to. Valuation formulas too. A strategic buyer is not as concerned with your financial. They are concerned. I mean, they do look at it. But as you mentioned earlier, they may have a customer base that they can apply what you do to their customer base. And for the, I'll pick a number, $1 million that they would pay for your business, within a year, they could sell $1 million of what you do to their existing customer base at no additional marketing cost and receive a complete return on their investment. So what is that worth to that company, you know, over the next 10 years? It's worth a lot more than $1 million that they would pay you for that. So they may pay you $2 million, $3 million. Where a financial buyer may only pay you $1 million because that's what the financial metrics in your specific industry really mean. And to them, from a financial formula standpoint, but a strategic buyer, for a number of reasons, may pay 2, 3, 4 times what a financial buyer will pay. And that's really, if your business has that component to it, then you need to start thinking about, how do I find and position my company to find and sell to a strategic buyer? And start thinking about that, because rarely does it work out by sheer luck or chance. Sometimes it does. Sometimes you're in the right place at the right time, but you can make your own luck a lot of times when you're looking for a strategic buyer.
Yeah, I've used in the past LinkedIn or Skype or some of these other companies that were bought, or the Flip Camera, because as you know, Marvin, they were bought when they were losing money. So from a financial perspective, you know, you'll be asking yourself, why would you buy that? But to your point, when you start looking and saying, no, I'm going to have access to this new data or this new customer base, or I could market to them, or I now have their data to know how to make my product better or market my product better, then that's worth millions, if not billions sometimes. So those kinds of things. Yeah. And I know I'm using big names, but it's the same concept that applies in a way to the smaller buyer.
Yeah, a strategic buyer will look at the decision to build or buy. You know, do we want to take LinkedIn, for example? Certainly Microsoft, when they acquired LinkedIn, had the financial resources to build another LinkedIn if they decided that that's what they wanted to do. But when they looked at the expertise and the community that already existed within LinkedIn, the knowledge and the understanding and the team that had been put together, it would have taken them you know, years, if not decades, to come close. And they probably would not have been able to pull it off because LinkedIn would be moving faster than they were and changing and evolving. And so they made the decision to buy instead of build. And that came with a hefty price tag because LinkedIn had spent the resources and time to position themselves to have something that was of value, you know, to Microsoft. And you gave the example of Skype, you know, the number of users that were using Skype at the time. It would have taken years for Microsoft to build something competitive to that. And so they paid up for it, billions of dollars. And so the problem is that most entrepreneurs that are running a small business think, well, I'm not Microsoft, you know, I'm not LinkedIn, you know, it doesn't really apply to me. Couldn't be further from the truth. Most of the acquisitions and strategic buyer, you know, companies that are bought strategic for strategic purposes are smaller companies. They aren't the huge big companies. We hear about those because they make the headlines, but that's not the bulk of the transactions that are out there.
Very good. I agree. I think there are lots of, you know, two men or five men or 50 people, a woman or person companies that are being bought and, you know, sold much more faster and more often than these bigger ones. Although to your point, when one of those get bought, because the sheer number of dollars as well as the big names that comes with it makes the headline news, where, you know, in my own community here in Detroit, a lot of times I know of one being bought or another one being sold, but they never made the news and they'll never make the news, because although it was a big number and millions, it's just the news are not interested in them because it was a seven-man company or woman company or a person company bought by another 50-man or woman or person company, and they don't seem to care much about that.
Well, yeah, that's true. And it's like anything else, you know, the quarterback gets all the glory when, you know, he couldn't win without the rest of the team, but you never have the defensive lineman getting all the headlines.
Yeah, but Marvin, I want to go back to something you mentioned. I felt it was really powerful, actually. So, which could allow people to get, again, I'm trying to give them some of the frameworks. You know, I know that there's each one of these nuggets we discussed easily has, I'm assuming based on just talking to you here, you have a series of other questions that you ask them to get even too close to the answer, right? But one of the things you mentioned, I feel a lot of times, maybe entrepreneurs may have insights from it, which was, you know, the whole concept of, it looks like, you know, everything else, but all the other components in it makes a difference. I'm going to use the analogy of either a car or a house. So just having a three-bedroom house and a two baths and a basement, you know, it doesn't mean that you could sell it for the same price. If there are no updates, if there are, you know, where is it located? What are the other houses in the neighborhoods are sold? Has it been maintained or not? Do you have, you know, do you take care of the inside or not? The outside is taken care of or not? Does the area overall is a low crime, bad school, good school? All those things are really, you know, if you only look at a business from a business perspective, there's much more to it, which you were saying earlier, than just the business. Looking at all those components that goes into all that. Same thing with a car, you know, you could buy a four wheel and four seaters. You could spend, you know, $10,000 or $10 million some days. It seems like at least some of the cars go for $100,000 or $1 million or more. It's the same concept, but again, what's in the car? How is it being made? Did you maintain it? Do you have receipts for your oil change or not? Does it still have a warranty or not? All these things can make a difference in the price. And to your point, am I buying it to buy, to use it, or am I buying it for parts? Am I buying it because I'm gonna gift it to someone, or am I buying it for my kid? Or am I buying it for my significant other? All these things are really part of the factors that I feel you just brought in so many wonderful things that you let a light on for the entrepreneurs to think about their business a little bit more, maybe comprehensive than just the service or the product that they're delivering, because that's one of it, but it's not the business.
That's all true. You know, it's, you used the example of a house, you know, a house is made up of more than the front door and the garage, you know, You know, there's the how the house is built and, you know, what is important to the buyer. You know, some buyers will look at a house and the backyard is the most important component. That's what they're looking for. They could care less about how much storage is in the house. And some people are all about storage, you know. So when buyers look at a business, they are looking for something that fits their specific needs. So often I've seen negotiations in a buy-sell process get bogged down because the seller does not really understand the motivation of the buyer. They don't take time, again, to go around the other side of the table and actually understand what the buyer is saying. For example, there was not too long ago that a business was being sold, a relatively small business being sold, you know, had a handful of employees and had a good reputation in the area. And it was all about lifestyle of the buyer. He did not want a long commute, and he was negotiating for other things because he didn't really want to admit that that was his hangup, that he didn't want the long commute. So he was making big deal issue out of, you know, the financial statements and the inventory and obsolescence in the inventory, what he wanted to be included and not included. And the seller just couldn't understand, because all these things are relatively minor things that you just sign a dollar number to it and move on. But he was making a big deal of it. And I was able to pick up on that and eventually flush out that it was the issue of where he lived, and he'd have to drive an hour and 10 minutes every morning and again every evening to buy this business. And we just eventually conclude, I told the business owner, you just have to move on. You're never going to maximize the value, because the value is something that he is placing on what he wants to pay for your business, trying to offset that with a lifestyle consideration on his side of the table. And so, you know, it is being able to understand, you know, when you actually get into the negotiation, of really what that buyer is thinking, you know, and what motivates them and what they're willing to pay up or pay down for. And in that particular situation, the recommendation was to walk away. And sure enough, someone showed up a few months later that lived in the same town, and he got 30% more than for his business because the buyer was local and that was not a consideration. So you have a situation here where one buyer for the same business was willing to pay 30%, wanted to pay 30% less because of what his motivations were. And then you had another buyer pay 30% more for what that was, because that wasn't a problem for him. And he was, you know, looking at the value of the business as it was, because it was a 10-minute commute for him. And so, you know, it's things like this that if you don't have good advisors around you that understand, and they do this every day, all day long, you're going to try to do it yourself, kind of the do-it-yourself, you know, business exit plan. That works sometimes. I'm not saying that there aren't bright people out there that can handle their own transaction, but generally speaking, you need a group of professionals around you. And you don't want to try to assemble those professionals, you know, when you're running for the exits, you know. You want to have those professionals in. I'm writing a book right now called Pack Your Parachute. And I use that metaphor because pilots don't pack their parachute when the engines are on fire. They have it ready to go. And so if there's a problem, they grab the parachute and exit the plane. And, you know, the plane goes one way, they go the other, but they land safely. And so often in an exit, it is running for the doors, because there's a triggering event in the business that takes place. It may be an illness, a death, a divorce, a partner problem. It may be a competitive situation. A new competitor has entered the marketplace. It may be burnout on the part of the entrepreneur. Whatever it is. And if your exit is event triggered and you're not ready for it, and you're trying to literally pack your parachute, you know, while the plane, the metaphor of the business being the plane, is spiraling down, if you get out in time, you're going to vastly undervalue what the business is actually probably worth if you'd had that parachute packed and could have pulled the trigger and exited very quickly. So I just take all of the, you know, things that I've learned and from the podcasts and case studies and actual situations that, you know, people can learn from and not have to make those same mistakes.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I think I was mentioning earlier, Marvin, which is, it's like someone watching, you know, someone swimming or playing soccer, and they're like, oh, they could have done this, they could have done that. Well, sure. Do you realize that those people are being trained every single day? So it sure looks easy for you to watch it, and it sure looks like anyone else can do it. But the reality is far away from it. And I know that, you know, it's not maybe what people need to hear or want to hear. I'm sorry, what they want to hear, but it's what they need to hear. Because back to what I was saying earlier, the words mean something, and they know what the words are. They might even get the content for free from somewhere, reading a book or whatever. But the reality is, till you get those experts that you're talking about, having them on your side, listening, analyzing, and planning for these things and getting you to exercise what that looks like. Otherwise, it's just, it looks easy. It's not easy. It's like, you know, to your point, jumping from that plane, it looks easy, but those pilots get trained for it, go to school for it, practice almost, you know, monthly or, you know, yearly basis. I forget how often they have to do it, but it's, you know, being reminded all the time. And people, you know, we don't want to, I mean, I don't want to underestimate that value that brings into the table, because sure, I understand that the market sometimes don't appreciate it or don't understand it, because I mentioned to you earlier, we're in the similar space where I say entrepreneurship, start a business or grow a business. They're like, oh, I know how to do that. Well, sure, you know what growth means, you know what business means, but do you know how to put them together for your business to make it work? The truth is, we make it look easy, to your point, because we do it every day. But doing it yourself is a bit different. So you're in the same boat. It looks easy to exit. It looks easy to sell your business. But if you are not practicing it every day and asking some of these quick questions that I got from you just by asking you one question, clearly there's a whole breadth of questions and series of things that needs to happen that you could easily help someone figure out. Those things just takes time and takes a lot of insights, and I call it wisdom, because you know you could. Sure, you could read about that in a book, but till you go in and feel and see what's going on, there are all kinds of other sensors, to your point, about the house or the car that people are going to value or devalue, or listening to the other side is saying that you may be able to shed a light on or extract or actually put away because no one really cares about that point or whatever. And I think that's just a ton of value that we don't want to underestimate by saying, well, I see what there's how they're swimming. I could swim like that. I watch swimmers all the time. I'm like, whoa, they're swimming like a fish. Let me go try that. I couldn't possibly do it when I tried so hard. I splash everywhere. Oh, and they seem to just go smooth. Go ahead.
I think your point is well taken. I mean, for those in your audience that, you know, like competitive sports, you know, Tom Brady, whether you're a Tom Brady fan or not, he has a coach. You know, Peyton Manning had a coach, Tiger Woods had a coach, all of your Olympic athletes have coaches, you know, so, you know, if no one gets to the level of a professional athlete, to the top of their game, without people coaching them and observing what they're doing and giving them feedback on how they can do what they do better, so they can do it a lot better. And, you know, running a business, and especially the problem is, I think most people, you run a business on a day-to-day basis. So if you screw it up one day, you have a chance to fix it the next day. It isn't the end of the world, you know, but when it comes time to exit your business, if you screw it up, you're not going to have too many more chances to get it right. And for people that at their end of their career that are getting close to retirement, they don't want to stand at the plate and swing at the ball and go strike one, strike two, and then there's all that pressure for the next strike. You don't want to strike out, and you get so fixated on it and you screw it up and you strike out and you walk away and fade into retirement with a lifestyle that's entirely different than you envisioned. And the issue is, it doesn't have to happen. It just doesn't. There is a mythology to it. If you follow and the process of what a buyer is going to want to see in your business, and you go through and check off all the boxes when it comes time to exit, most of the work is done. You're probably going to get as much as you want for your business, or very close to it, or in some cases more, and in a lot of cases, a lot more. If things line up the way you plan for them to line up, and you can take advantage of opportunistic situations that come up. I can give you, we don't have the time here.
No, Marvin, actually, I was going to say, we could keep you here for days, but obviously we don't want to.
I'm passionate about this. But in any point, what I could do for your audience there is I prepared a report. Your audience should probably just take down the website of businessexitstories.com, or go to Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Google Podcasts and subscribe to the podcast, because there's hundreds of stories there of all sizes and stripes about people that have exited their business well and not so well. And then I've prepared a report that kind of outlines what we've talked about here today. And that report can be found at businessexitstories.com/report. And you can just download it. And it's a quick read that gives you kind of the highlights of what you need to be looking at.
Thank you so much. I mean, that gives us a good conclusion. So if there was a word or two or a sentence that you would say as we close today, what would you tell someone about this subject?
Now, don't leave, decades or a lifetime of hard work to chance. Plan your exit.
Love it. Marvin, thank you so much for making such for making time and for sharing such wonderful insights about your expertise and your journey. And I'm sure we'll be talking soon. Thanks a lot.
All right. Well, this has been great. I appreciated the time, and you got insightful questions.